Hello and welcome to another episode of Grow Street Journal. And less than a month after the government moved to make cannabis available on prescription, many, if not most, have been left scratching their heads somewhat at what this actually means, who can get access, how do they get access. And really, there's nothing strong that suggests that this lack of clarity is not going to persist into the short to medium term future. We have the NICE guidelines on prescribing that are not due to be published for another year or so. However, this rather bleak outlook is tempered somewhat by my guest today, who is, to my knowledge, the first person to receive a high THC cannabis flower on prescription in the UK. So whilst this gentleman wishes to remain anonymous, he has kindly agreed to come on and discuss his story with us today. So hello.
Hello, good morning. How are you?
Yes, very well, thanks. And you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to have me on your show.
No, not at all. Thank you very much for keeping the good people of Reddit updated on your journey with medical cannabis. Otherwise, I never would have saw it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Yeah.
So you're not new to using cannabis in a medicinal capacity. So the 1st of November announcement wasn't a big headline news flash for you that cannabis had therapeutic properties, was it?
Absolutely not. No, I have been involved in medical cannabis personally since about 2016, which is when I first started having medical problems. I have degenerative disc disease, which basically means the discs in my neck have pretty much dissolved, causing the discs to hernias in the disc, which cause compression on the spine, on the nerves, and on the spinal cord, causing excruciating pain. I was prescribed pretty much anything and everything you can think of, from opiates to benzodiazepine. And pretty much everything else possible, but with very, very limited results. I did have an operation in 2016 to have one of the discs in my neck replaced with a titanium disc, which definitely helped. But there is, unfortunately, by the time I did it, it was too late to reverse permanent nerve damage. So I do have nerve damage causing quite severe pain. And since then, I've been using medicinal cannabis to great success and great effect. However, due to the fact that it wasn't legally available on prescription until a couple of weeks ago, it was difficult to be able to do so in a legal way.
Sure. And 2016, I mean, attitudes and perceptions towards cannabis in just 2 years have moved on so quickly and so far. I mean, back then, there wasn't really, to my knowledge, much information around the therapeutic potential of cannabis, you know, especially in the UK, compared to our friends in North America. So how did you first come to understand that cannabis may be something that could help you?
It's a very good question. You're right. From in the UK, medical cannabis didn't exist, even in theory, until very, very recently. But it has been going on quite a while in the US. In California, I think it was legalized for medical purposes back in the 90s, if I'm correct. So it's not a new thing. My personal introduction to cannabis is quite bizarre. I had never used cannabis before. I'd never been a recreational user. I'll be honest with you, I grew up in a quite in a bubble of non-cannabis users, as it were. So I probably hadn't even met, or maybe had met, cannabis users. It wasn't something that was part of my life. So I had no experience either with using cannabis or seeing the effects of cannabis. But in 2016, when I was in severe pain, and I can't explain this logically, I suddenly had a thought pop into my brain. I really wish I could smoke a joint right now. And it doesn't make any sense. It's absolutely bizarre. It wasn't that I knew what it was even. It wasn't that I knew people who had done it. I was completely naive to the thing. And I can't explain logically how the thought entered my mind. I would assume that I must have heard something on the news or seen something subconsciously, and that's why it popped into my mind. But I can't logically explain it. So then I started doing quite a bit of research about the subject. I spoke to doctors in the US, and I actually spoke to a doctor in Holland, both of which prescribed cannabis, although there was obviously the issue of getting it into legally into the UK. However, it's quite literally been a life changer, because the pain is neuropathic, because in the nerves, standard drugs of opiates, etc., do not generally have a successful healing potential. So since 2016, this has been the only thing that I've been using and the only thing I've needed to use.
That's amazing. So the opioids and things like that, they just weren't as effective at dealing with the pain, should we say?
I think it's more of a case that the dose required to get an effective pain relief had such severe side effects that the disadvantages outweighed the advantages. So a low dose was not effective, and a high dose was, apart from I was terrified of getting addicted, and I was suffering very much from the side effects of opioids. So there was no middle ground. There was no point where I could say that the advantages outweigh the disadvantages.
Sure. And then, of course, the cannabis would have a side effect, which many people in the recreational side of things would enjoy, but I imagine that could be very different in a medicinal capacity. How would you compare the side effects of cannabis, so getting high, with that of the other drugs that you were tried?
It's a good question. Obviously, most people think of cannabis, getting high, getting stoned, and so on, as the main point. In my case, that's not, it is a side effect. It's not the intention. But what I did in order to avoid that problem was to build my tolerance to such an extent that a dose I can take for successful pain relief doesn't have any or has a limited effect in getting high or getting stoned. So recreational users actually consider this a disadvantage, and they would do something like take a tolerance break in order to reduce their tolerance so they can get high on less. I am do it exactly the opposite, to build the tolerance such that I can take a dose that is therapeutic without having the side effect of getting stoned or getting high.
And how long do you find that kind of tolerance takes to build up, and then how long does it take to diminish also as well?
It builds up with regular use. It did take a couple of months of regular use to build up, but once it's maintained, as long as I don't go for more than a couple of days without using the cannabis, it does stay fairly stable.
That's brilliant. I really love that it has this property where the side effect, which it is, you're right, is a side effect in this use case, diminishes in potency. However, the actual the healing properties, the beneficial aspects that you're looking to get from it, that doesn't seem to diminish, right?
That's correct. Yeah. The health, the pain relief, doesn't diminish, even though the tolerance is there. So I can get the pain relief without getting stoned, without getting high.
That's amazing. And I guess you've probably tried products like CBD, which I'm sure you know, the non-intoxicating compound of cannabis that's legally sold as a food supplement in the UK, but it also is sold as a medicine by registered pharmaceutical companies. But I imagine if it's to do with your nerves, then the CBD is probably not as effective, is it?
I have tried CBD. At lower doses, I found no effect whatsoever. At higher doses, I just found it made me nauseous and I didn't notice any positive effects from it. I know some people have had excellent gain from CBD, but because CBD doesn't actually enter the, it doesn't pass through the blood-brain barrier, And because neuropathic pain in the nerves does need for the substance and normally the THC to pass through in order to have an effect, CBD isn't really effective. This is from personal experience in neuropathic pain. If I understand correctly, people who have got arthritic pains, or which are not necessarily in the nerves, I think these people are having much more success with CBD. But the neuropathic and nerve pains, I think CBD is not the right solution. So personally, I haven't had any success with CBD.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. And so you mentioned that you got a prescription for cannabis in America and a prescription for cannabis in the Netherlands. Were these both prescriptions you had in your hand back in 2016?
Yes, I mean from the US, it doesn't actually, because it's federally illegal in the US, even for medical purposes. There's no such thing as a prescription per se. It's more of a medical recommendation. So
a doctor's note.
Sorry?
Like a doctor's note.
It's a doctor's note. It's something which is, because federal prescribing is dependent on legality in federal law, therefore it cannot be prescribed, but recommended, as it were, is something which works under state law. So therefore, since under state law in California, where I got the recommendation from, it is legal, that's the way the states got around, as it were, the federal law forbidding cannabis prescriptions.
And so it seems like, please correct me if I'm wrong, but the work you've done in visiting these different doctors in different countries, am I right in thinking that I'm getting the feeling you've tried to look at legal ways of bringing this medicine into the country? You know, like, I think a lot of people will just go out and acquire it in the black market or whatever and hope that change happens, but it seems like you've kind of been actively looking at, okay, how could I bring this medicine legally into the country?
Absolutely. I believe that anyone who has a requirement for a certain type of medicine should be able to acquire that medicine, and I don't think that the government or the law or politicians should have any say in that. However, being pragmatic, I'm not looking to commit a criminal offence. I'm not looking to break the law. And I would much rather do what I need to do in a way which is legal. So my focus over the last couple of years, whilst I haven't done any active campaigning and I haven't been involved in politics at all, although I did write to my MP to discuss the situation and he was very supportive, but I'm not looking to break the law. I'm looking to have the law changed, and when the law is changed, to take advantage of the law change in order to obtain legally what I feel is something which should be available to anyone and everyone who requires it.
Well, it seems like you've succeeded there, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Well, I've succeeded to a certain extent. I don't feel that the law has yet reached the point that we can say medical cannabis is available in the UK for everyone. If you see in the media and you see elsewhere, people are still getting refused. So we're not yet there, but I think we are getting there. We're definitely going in the right direction.
Yeah, I'd agree. And you're right, it's kind of like we're not there with access in the UK yet. If someone like yourself has actually still got to cross the border and yourself and bring that back into the country yourself as well, you know, it's not viable for most people as a permanent solution. But very interesting in terms of kind of no one's done this before, so you're pioneering really, and it's kind of almost paving the way for more people to start doing these things.
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's a case of making the best of a bad situation, as it were. The medication I was prescribed, Bedrocan, from, which is available from the Netherlands, is one particular strain, which is, I think it's a Jacquera strain. It's a sativa, which is not necessarily the best for everyone. So we do need much more variety. And obviously the ability to actually obtain it physically in the UK, whilst legally the availability is there to obtain it in the UK, I don't think the logistics have been set up yet for that to happen. So it will happen. It will happen very soon. But I think it's going to be a slow, continually moving journey rather than breakthrough moments.
Sure. Yeah, I can see that. So with your journey and your access to this, was it difficult for you to obtain a prescription in the UK?
It wasn't particularly difficult. I actually decided to do it privately rather than going through the NHS. And the reason is, the main reason is, first of all, to get to see a consultant on the NHS can take, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, just to see a random specialist in the particular field who may or may not have the confidence and the sympathy to prescribe cannabis. And secondly, an NHS doctor, an NHS consultant, has far more restrictions as to what and for what he can prescribe because of the financial issues and the fact that if it's an NHS prescription, the government will pay it. Therefore, the doctors cannot prescribe anything they want to, especially in such a case where there's no MHRA authorization. The government has said that the NHS will only consider prescribing cannabis in three specific cases. I think epilepsy, chemotherapy, side effects, and MS are the only three diseases or illnesses that the NHS will consider prescribing medical cannabis. Whereas because it's legally available, a private doctor can prescribe for anything he wants to, as long as it's within his speciality and within his remit. So neuropathic pain is unfortunately not yet recognized by the latest NHS guidelines as being a suitable disease or illness for medical cannabis, and therefore the NHS will not at this stage be able to prescribe it. So I decided to do it privately. I had my operation in 2016 privately, so I went back to the same consultant as I was using. I discussed with him, you know, the symptoms and so on, and obviously he had my records, you know, from 2016. We reviewed the medication that he'd prescribed me and that I'd been prescribed from, you know, other doctors. He said, you've basically been prescribed absolutely everything. And he agreed to prescribe Bedrocan, which I was happy about. I asked for Bedrocan as opposed to anything else because it was the only medical cannabis that I thought that I'd be able to obtain here. I believe in Canada there are others, but Bedrocan is available in Europe, so that's the one I asked for. He gave me a prescription, which was stage one, as it were. Stage two was trying to actually source the prescription. So I went to my local pharmacist. I discussed with him the situation, and he said that he will speak to his wholesalers and his specials manufacturers, because it's still called a special, and see if he can obtain it for me. As of today, I'm still waiting to hear from him. I've sent a few chaser emails to ask what's going on. He's still trying to source it. So I think eventually he will manage to source it, but he hasn't yet to date. So if theoretically, what he could do as a pharmacy would be to apply for an import license from the Home Office, send a copy of that to the Dutch Office of Medical Cannabis, who would produce an export license, and that would then send the cannabis to the pharmacy to dispense to me. So there is a way around it if the pharmacist would agree to do so, but I've got no idea what the cost would be, because obviously he would obviously expect to take a markup, and I don't know how long it would take for that procedure to go through. So because of the EU, at least until March, we are still part of the EU. And in Holland, any pharmacy can fulfill a prescription from any doctor in the EU. So I contacted a couple of pharmacies in Holland, in the Netherlands, to get some quotes. I emailed the prescription. They told me it was ready to collect. So I actually flew out to Amsterdam to pick up the prescription.
Wow. That's awesome. And so once you got there, it was pretty smooth collecting it?
Absolutely. I flew in to Schiphol Airport, took a train, and then walked to the pharmacy. Basically walked in, said, I'm here to pick up a prescription, gave them my name and date of birth, and they gave me the prescription. Obviously, they charged me the cost. I think the cost was just under €6 a gram, which I think is a reasonable price. So not complaining about the cost. And that was it. I was only in the pharmacy for about 3 minutes.
Sometimes these monumental kind of actions can feel slightly underwhelming, hey? In and out.
Absolutely, yes. it's like picking up any other prescription. You know, you walk in, ask for the prescription, you pick it up. You know.
And so did you take the plane? So you flew back?
Yeah, I flew back. The paperwork, as it were, even technically, on the strict letter of the law, you do need an import license to bring it back. But the Home Office has something called a personal import policy, which means if you're bringing in on your person less than a 3 month supply of a controlled substance in schedules 2, 3, 4, or 5, and you're staying in the UK for less than 3 months, then you do not need a import license and you don't need to declare it. So it's less than a 3 month supply and I'm staying in the UK for less than 3 months because I'm always in and out, and especially if I have to start going out to pick up regular prescriptions. So therefore I took advantage of the personal import policy. I was prepared to declare it in customs just in case, just to make sure everybody, belt and brace approach. But unfortunately, when I came back to the UK, there was no one there. So I just walked through.
Typical.
Yeah, they're never there when you want them, are they?
No, well, yeah, exactly. It would have been great. But, I mean, so this sounds like it's, somewhat that you clearly have a good understanding and knowledge of EU and our local laws, and have been able to use that and apply that knowledge to your advantage, which is fantastic. But they say less than 3 months supply. How does anyone know what 3 months supply of cannabis is? I mean, obviously you know what it is to you, but does the Bedrocan come with like a dosage instruction on the label that would inform how much 3 month worth of supply is?
Absolutely, yeah. And just like any other prescription, there's a label, take X amount 3 times a day. So it's fairly simple mathematics to do the maths and work out what sort of supply you're bringing with you. I also obviously had a copy of the prescription with me in case there were any issues at customs. So it was I very clearly plus a doctor's letter from the doctor. So I could very clearly demonstrate that it was less than 3 months supply. So,
right. This is strikes me as where we start to get into uncertain territory, because dosing with cannabis, I'd have imagined is somewhat subjective and dependent on the conditions. So I mean, what out of interest, what's Bedrocan's recommended kind of daily dosage?
There is actually no recommended dosage. The official prescribing guidelines issued by Bedrocan are titrate as appropriate. Titration basically means start low and go as high as you need to until you no longer need to carry on, or until the side effects exceed the gain. So it's a medication which has no formal dosage. And obviously, because the LD50, the amount needed to have, to kill 50% of the people, is so high, it's practically infinite. I think the only way to die from cannabis is to, have a one-ton block dropped on you from a skyscraper.
Yes, physical trauma, yeah.
So there's no way of overdosing to a sense that there's any danger. And the reason is, quite simply, is because the cannabinoid receptors, the CB1 receptors that are in the brain, aren't found anywhere in the brain that's responsible for the vital functions. So the part of your brain, which is, you know, the brain stem, and the part of the brain that controls your breathing, the heart rate, and so on, doesn't have any cannabis receptors. So therefore, the cannabis receptors can't have any effect on breathing or on, you know, or anything else, which is where overdoses from other substances, opiates, for example, because they affect the brain stem, which controls vital functions. But because there aren't any cannabinoid receptors there, it's physically impossible to overdose. And as such, there's far less a risk with cannabis as there are with other substances, which is why the official guidance is titrate to go as, you know, as high as necessary.
I see. Well, that's good to know. Similarities of the CBD as well, you know, the general dosing that I've seen there is start slow, and it seems like it's kind of like you manage your own side effects and almost like keeping a journal, right, until you get to the dose that you need. And then I guess what we talked about earlier, it's just keeping it a kind of a maintenance dose there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, every person is different. I think the variations amongst dose is going to be much bigger than other medication because of the way it affects. People can build tolerances quicker than others. Bearing in mind that THC is absorbed by body fat, therefore people who have got more body fat are going to have significantly different responses to doses as people who have got less body fat, and so on. So there's no one size fits all, as it were. So it's very, very much a personal dose journey, as it were, adjusting up and down and so on. And bearing in mind, it's not just the THC or the CBD which is having an effect. Because of the terpenes and the other cannabinoids in flower and cannabis flower, these are going to, as it were, affect the dosage, as it were, to make in order. So therefore, there's a huge amount of variety depending on exactly what strain is being used, depending on the person themselves, depending on 1,000 different other factors. So I think it would be impossible to have a specific dose for people across the board. And that's the approach taken both in the US and in Canada and in the Netherlands.
That's great. Yeah, I don't see any other approach really whilst we still get better at learning about this plant, because it's, you know, it's not like a take two pills a day sort of jobby, like you say. So yeah, it's interesting to see how that kind of side of it develops and progresses as we're able to learn more about the plant, because I'm sure we will get to a stage where, you know, we know a lot more about ourselves as individuals, whether it's from doing these like the DNA tests, understanding about our genetics and any predispositions we may have, and I'm sure we'll start to understand that all kind of holistically and how cannabis helps, whereas right now where we are is like we've just been saying, is take it and see how you feel and keep a track of it and optimize for the individual.
Absolutely.
So one other thing that I'm intrigued about on the Bedrocan packaging is, do they give any actual directions for use? Because yeah, it's not like you can just eat it or put it in a pill. You have to actually prepare this herb in a certain way. If they've given you the flower, I'm sure you kind of need to heat it in some way to extract the active THC out of there. Do they give any sort of guidance around that, or do they leave it to the individual user?
No, I did receive a 4-page guidance booklet. Unfortunately, it was all in Dutch.
Yeah, I can understand why they may not have got the time to translate it to English. Yeah, I'm sure they're probably working on that now, though, aren't they?
I think it could be. If you look on Bedrocan's website, they do have information. I'm not sure. But this was actually specific from the pharmacy. This particular pharmacy, it was their own internal.
Oh, cool.
It was personalized with them. So I don't know if they wrote it themselves or whether they just white-labeled Bedrocan's guidance. I did have a look through. I don't really understand Dutch, but I can, pick up a few words. I understand German, so it's quite similar. And effectively, there were two recommended methods. So, where the first method which they suggested in the information was making a tea. So dissolving the cannabis in basically making a tea bag from it. However, when I spoke to the Dutch doctor who prescribed me in 2016, he told me that this is not an effective way. And bearing in mind that THC is not water soluble or other, it's very, very slightly soluble in water, and therefore very, very little of the THC is going to be extracted in the water. So the advice I was given, and this was the second option in the informational guidance, was to use a vaporizer. Vaporizing heats the, I'm sure I'm preaching to the converted here, but vaporizing heats the cannabis to a temperature somewhere around about the boiling point of cannabis, which is, I think, about 370 degrees Fahrenheit, if I'm correct, something about that, I'm not sure. And then it's inhaled. So there's no smoking involved, there's no combustion involved. So you've obviously got the health benefits of not breathing in carbon monoxide and breathing in smoke. But you're still getting the benefit of having the cannabis heated to the point of the boiling point of THC and obviously other terpenes present and inhaling it that way. So that's the method that I use.
Yeah, and that makes sense as a kind of medicinal way of ingesting cannabinoids. Obviously, smoking something or combusting material is rarely going to be seen as medicinal, even if it does deliver those cannabinoids quickly. I think vaping gets all those benefits, but without any of the downsides. And yeah, that is also consistent with this the stance that the NHS have seemed to be taking on cannabis at the moment, which is that the flower is okay, which I was surprised. I was pleased, but surprised at. And the vaporization is an acceptable method for using that cannabis.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, the legislation introduced in the UK specifically rules out smoking. So smoking is actually still illegal to prescribe cannabis for the purpose of smoking, and technically it's still illegal to smoke cannabis even if it's medical. I am not clear on the legal basis, bearing in mind that in the UK there are several cannabis offences. The main offences are possession, supply, or possession with intent to supply, and obviously production or growing. There is no legal offence. There is no law against consuming cannabis or indeed any other drug. So I'm not quite sure how the somebody is legally in possession of cannabis, but they were to choose to smoke it, I'm not quite sure what law they would actually be breaking. Bearing in mind that there is no law against consuming drugs, only a possession, and the possession is de facto legal. So, but nevertheless, I think the main reason why the smoking prohibition has come in is in order to assist law enforcement. If someone is smoking, then the burden of proof would have to be on them that it is medical. And obviously, because they're technically breaking the law by smoking it, they're not going to be so it's not going to be easy for them to claim that it's for medical purposes or it's being prescribed. But I don't smoke tobacco or cannabis or anything, so personally it doesn't bother me that smoking has not been allowed. I can see that for certain people there may be an advantage to combusting the herb or smoking the herb, but obviously, the health effects of smoking anything are well known. So I think the government has, if they are going to restrict anything, I think everyone would agree that it is reasonable to restrict combustion or smoking of cannabis for medical purposes.
Yeah, I can see the sense in that. I can see some sense in that. With the flower then that you have, And you'll be vaping this, I assume. Is that going to be the same then as you were? Is that the same method in which you were consuming cannabis before you had the Bedro can?
Yes. I for pain relief, I personally feel that there's a better method than the flower, and that's by using concentrates. However, I'm not sure of the legal situation, whether I am legally allowed to extract the THC, or as it were, by making shatter or wax or making concentrates from the Bedro can. Obviously, there's plenty of safe methods of doing it, using a rosin press or similar, and there's alcohol extractions, butane extractions, which have obviously got the risks and so on. But that would be a preferred method for me, because of the pain and because of the fact that you can get an instant or pretty much instantaneous higher dose far quicker than you can just by vaporizing flower. So I'm not yet clear on the legal situation as to whether or not this can be, this legal cannabis, which I'm legally possessing, whether or not if I were to press it to make a rosin or to extract it in a different way, whether or not that would still be legal or not. So I'm not, one day I'll try and do a bit more research, see if I can get some clarity on that. I'm not a lawyer, so not sure how I'd find that out. But it will be something I'd be very interested to know, because if it were legal, that would be a method that I would prefer to do.
Well, we're trying to get a lawyer onto it, one of the next few podcasts, so I'll make sure I ask him that specific question. I might get back to you with an answer on it.
That would be fantastic if you could.
Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating, really. There's no like precedence for this kind of thing, is there? It's completely new territory that we're breaking into. It's a difficult one, because obviously you should be able to do that if it makes the medicine more effective for you, but I'm thinking if it kind of changes their product in some way, doesn't it? Like the THC content on the lid that they on their packaging, I guess would change via the extraction method, and then it makes their dosing guidelines redundant. And yeah, I have no idea. I mean, in practice, it's obviously unlikely to get kind of brought up, but it's be good to know if there is any kind of legal standing or not for that.
Yeah, I mean, your comments on the dosing guidance, bearing in mind that, as we discussed earlier, there are no real dosing guidelines. It's self-titrated almost by definition. And even if you were even to keep things in perspective, if I were to take 1 gram of cannabis and extract that and get whatever I get from that, let's say I get 20% out of that, so I've now got 200 milligrams, I would know that the 200 milligrams is 5 times stronger than the original material, and therefore I would use a fifth of the amount. So it shouldn't be difficult to keep the dosing correct. I just need to know how much starting material I started with. And, bearing in mind that all that's happening when you're making a concentrate is you're removing the inert organic material. That's all that's happening.
Mm.
So you're not creating anything new. You're just taking out the inert material, which is disposed of, and using what's left. So start with a gram, throw out 800 milligrams of inert material. You're still left with the equivalent of a gram of dried flower. So it is possible to dose, and obviously you've got the benefits of not having to vaporize 80% of something which you're not gaining anything from.
Yeah. Do you know of any concentrate products that are available legally in the States? I imagine it would probably be.
Yeah, I mean in the States, anything and everything is legal.
Wondering if you could, I'm thinking it's not ideal for a patient to have to get their medicine and then cook it, as it were, cook it into something else. You really probably just want the end result, right? That you can, because it's not like this is a recreational thing. It's medicine. You want to take it and be able to get on with your day and live your life. I'm just wondering, you know, if it would be possible to. But then again, they don't really mention concentrates in the legislation, do they? They mention resin.
The legislation doesn't specifically mention concentrates. However, it does give very clear guidelines as to what is acceptable. So cannabis-based medicine, is, I think there's three rules it has to meet. One, it has to be or to contain cannabis. So that would include any concentrates. And then it has to be labeled appropriately with the THC and so on. And it has to be produced for medical purposes as opposed to recreational purposes.
I wonder how they differ between those two things, though. If I create something, it's in the marketing, how it's sold, whether it's medicinal or recreational.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it has to be, you know, there are, I think it also has to be GMO, good manufacturing practice.
Yeah.
Approved and so on. So, yeah, I if it's grown for medical or it's grown for recreational, and this is a division we've had for a long time in the U.S. In the U.S., for example, in Colorado, which I think was one of the first states to legalize recreational cannabis, even till today, cannabis is either grown for recreational use or medical use, and they cannot be mixed. So if something is grown for recreational purposes, it cannot be sold as medical cannabis, and vice versa, something sold for medical cannabis cannot be sold as recreational cannabis. So they are very much separate. Even in I've been to Colorado, and they have separate dispensaries for medical and recreational. So sometimes in the same building, but there's completely separate entrances and so on. The prices are cheaper for medical because the tax is different. And in the US, recreational is only for age 21 and above, whereas medical is from 18 and above, or possibly even lower in certain cases. So that's why they are keeping medical separate. But things are grown separately, things are treated completely separately. So yeah, in the UK, it should be fairly easy to show that something is grown for medical purposes as opposed to recreational. But these are the three rules, as it were, and there's nothing in those that would exclude concentrates.
So theoretically, you could do the same thing, and if you'd have gone to your doctor saying, "I want, you know, this product rather than Bedrocan," I'm sure he would have been inclined to probably give that, and then it's up to you to go and get it.
Well, the problem is, the question is, where would I source it from? Bearing in mind that because cannabis, even medical cannabis, is still illegal federally in the US because it has no medical value, sick, I couldn't legally export it from the US.
So there'd be some in Canada then, perhaps.
So Canada is an option. However, Canada is currently, as far as I know, going through a bit of a domestic shortage due to the recent opening of the recreational market. So I think, as far as I understand, they're not able or willing to export at this stage. However, as I understand, this is likely to change once supply increases to meet demand.
So do you know if they are separating out their medicinal and recreation as well, then? If they've got a shortage recreationally, does that necessarily affect their medicinal?
Yes. From what I've seen anecdotally, it does. I think now there's far less separation in Canada between medical and recreational. So people who were until now obtaining medical cannabis may now find that a lot of the medical cannabis suppliers are no longer supplying because they've decided to go to the recreational market, which is obviously much bigger. And as such, there is less medical cannabis in the market in Canada now as well.
Ah, okay. It's crazy. It's an interesting time we're living in. There's one final thing that I just wanted to go over with you, because I'm sure that a lot of people will be listening to this. a lot of people that are using cannabis illegally in the UK, having to buy it off the street and what have you, that would probably love to be able to get their cannabis flower via a prescription. We've talked about your process going private rather than the NHS, and from what you've talked about, and the fact that your condition isn't that neuropathic pain isn't covered under the three bullet points that the NHS have kind of said they'll provisionally prescribe for, it seems like the only route to getting cannabis on prescription is going privately right now. However, then we look at the, I think you mentioned the cost of the Bedrocan was €6 per gram. I think street cannabis is in the UK roughly around £10 per gram. So we're looking at, literally half the price for the actual cost of the medicine. If you were to kind of like back of a napkin kind of tot up the costs of the trip to Amsterdam, the medication, I think you can get a quite a cheap kind of private appointment to see a doctor. I don't know the exact cost, but I think you can get something kind of reasonable. Of course, I guess the difference is you've had this history with your doctor over a couple of years, and it's finding that right individual. But have you say the costs, how does it kind of weigh up compared to buying it off the street or however you were, acquiring it beforehand?
It's a good question. I mean, if we could break it down, the cost of a private consultation, assuming somebody doesn't have medical insurance, is depending on the consultant. But even the top level consultants are going to charge approximately £250 for a consultation. That's a sort of standard price. That's pretty much what my consultant charges. And that would include, if appropriate, a prescription. So assume £250. However, bear in mind that somebody may need to go to a couple, it may be that the first one won't be cooperative, won't help, and somebody may be unfortunate and have to go to six in order to get a prescription. So it may be worth people doing research as to who is, likely to prescribe and so on. But assume £250 for the medical consultation if somebody doesn't have private insurance. Flights to Amsterdam are very cheap. I paid about £100 return, but I bought it about 24 hours before flying. So it was last minute. But looking around, you can get flights for about £30, £40 return, especially now at this time of year, off peak and so on. So if you book in advance and you're flexible as to when exactly you go, you can get easily a flight, including, whatever you need for less than £50. So let's call it £50. So that's, say, £300. Getting around in Amsterdam, you can get around for about £10 on the train and the trams and so on. So, on a one day travel pass, so we're up to £310. So that's pretty much it. Obviously, if it's going to be a regular thing, then you may be able to get a repeat prescription from which will be cheaper, or get a 3 month prescription. Generally, because it's a controlled substance in the UK, the guidelines are not to give more than a 30-day prescription. However, that's just guidelines, so the doctor may agree to give a longer prescription, especially if you explain that you're having to travel to obtain the medication and so on. And it may be a lot of doctors are happy to go do a consultation on the phone, or a follow-up consultation, which will be cheaper. So for the first time, assume £300 could it easily cover all the costs with the exception of the medication, which, as I said, I paid about €6 a gram, which is about £5 a gram. But there is quite a bit of variety because I did speak to quite a few pharmacies. Some were significantly more, so they can charge, it appears, whatever they want to charge.
Right, and so for the prescription, so how long did you get a 3 month prescription then?
I got a 1 month prescription.
So at the end of this month, Well, you have to go and get another follow-up with your consultant and get another prescription.
Yes, I will have another follow-up with the consultant. I will ask him for a longer prescription. Whether or not I'll get any longer than 30 days, I don't know. But, you know, if I can, it's great. Saves another trip, saves, you know, more expense. But if I can't, then, you know, that's, at this stage, an acceptable solution, although not ideal.
But I guess if someone could, tactically, if they, you know, even if they did just get a 1 month, okay, no, that's going to lock in the weight, isn't it? They couldn't just go and buy more from the pharmacist. So yeah, if they could get a 3 month prescription, and I guess they just have to purchase, you know, whatever the amount it costs them, to like £300 or whatever. If they buy that much of cannabis, then because they're saving half the amount, then it's going to work out about the same. But you know, yeah, I'm just trying to think if this is kind of feasible for people. But I think people will be able to make their own kind of decisions up on this. And if anyone's listening and wants any help or advice, do email in. We'll do our best to help with it. But thank you very much for sharing your story and your journey with this. Well done to you for navigating this in a professional and efficient way. And you know, congratulations for, and sorry that you had to go to all of this length to just get your medicine.
Well, yeah, I mean, not everything is easy. I'm happy I've been able to do it, and I hope this serves as an inspiration to other people who are in a similar situation, that they understand that, you know, the law has been changed. It's not what everyone wanted. It's not unrestricted availability from a GP or from a dispensary, but we're on the way, and anyone who needs it and is prepared to make the effort, and you know, obviously if they can, hopefully they can afford, go through the costs involved, should be able to obtain it in the same way that I have. I haven't done anything special. I haven't done anything that's not common knowledge or not available to anyone else who's medically required to have it. So there's no reason why anyone and everyone who needs it shouldn't be able to obtain it. And I hope to see many, many more posts and many, much more anecdotal evidence that people are getting it. So I wish everyone who needs it much luck and much success. And, you know, everyone should just be well. And ideally, no one should need it. Everyone should just be healthy.
Maybe if we had it in the first place, we would be healthy. You know, we wouldn't get these illnesses.
But that's, absolutely. That's something which is beyond my remit. I don't know. But, you know, one way or the other, if you need it, I hope you get it. And you will get it. Just don't give up. That's all I can say. Don't give up. There will be difficulties. You may get refusals. You may find complications. Just persevere.
Words of wisdom there. Thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure speaking with you, Francis.